Hello and welcome to Manx Radio, where you're listening to our general election candidate interview series. I'm our election producer, Amy Griffiths, and on Thursday, the 24th of September, you'll have the chance to decide who you want to represent you in the House of Keys. We're offering all the candidates the chance to take part in a 30-minute interview to help you get to know them better. Up next is Michael Crowe, who's standing in Russian. He's been speaking to Simon Richardson.
Michael, I suppose, firstly, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Thanks, Simon. I've got deep roots in the South. My family's lived in Russian for generations. My wife and I are proud to be raising our son in the community that's really helped shape our lives. In the 1970s, my family had the newspaper shop, the Examiner shop in Port St Mary. So the Happy Valley, Chapel Bay, that was my front garden in the 1970s. In the 1980s, moved to Port Erin. We had the newspaper shop there as well. I was old enough to start working behind the counter, so some of your listeners might recognise me selling them newspapers and toys back then. But that upbringing really gave me a grounding in local business and community life. And before I ever sat a professional exam. I'm very big on community. I was previously a parent governor at Russian Primary School, an active member of the Russian Rotary Club, helping raise funds for good causes, both here at home and further afield. But in terms of my career, I'm a chartered accountant. I've worked in that industry for 28 years. I'm a former chair of the Isle of Man Society of Chartered Accountants, and I'm a former president of the Isle of Man Chamber of Commerce. I was on their board for 14 years. I'm currently working within the government as chief executive of Finance Isle of Man, which is primarily supporting the largest sector of our economy, the financial and professional services community.
And what's motivated you to stand for election this time around?
Well, I think you know, Simon, I've got a bit of family history here. My mother was an MHK a while ago now. So it's always been something which is on my mind. But I do believe that we need more members in the Keys who have professional, commercial and financial experience. And I think it's about making the right decisions for the long-term future of our island, not a short-term political expediency.
You're standing in Russian. What have been the subjects raised by people on the doorsteps during your campaigning so far?
It's been interesting. There's been quite a variety of subjects mentioned. I think there's probably two, probably three actually, which come out fairly consistently. That's the wind farm at Eerie Stain. There's the speed limit issue and the potential for blanket speed limits of 20 miles an hour. But also, people do want to engage, want to talk to me about the economy because it is a fact that it's only a prosperous, thriving, growing economy which actually provides the funds to finance the public services that our families all deserve.
You mentioned wind farms there. Obviously, this is a very contentious issue. There is the on-land wind farm, which is proposed near your constituency. And, of course, there is the Morvanin out in the sea. Where do you stand on what is apparently a gagging, or seems to be some kind of gagging process by the Attorney General?
To be perfectly honest, when I declared my candidacy, I did see reports about people being advised not to talk about this, that, or the other. But I didn't have any direct communication from Cabinet Office or the Attorney General's on this. So I did seek clarification of that. And, I do understand that it's important that candidates don't say something which might recuse them from any future decision-making process. So, I do understand that. You've got to be measured and balanced. And I do suspect that most of the candidates, like myself, don't have all of the facts and all of the information about the offshore wind farm. I do have my own view, but I do understand the need for you not to be balanced, and if you're lucky enough to be elected, to be able to look at the facts and the information with a relatively open mind, but obviously you'd have your own preset personal position. I would have thought on a lot of these issues.
It does seem odd, though, doesn't it, that this is probably the biggest subject to be raised in the Isle of Man for many years, and politicians can't talk about it or can't express a view on it ahead of an election.
Yes, and I suspect it's it's just a factor, just a function of timing in the process and where we are. I suspect the Attorney General is in a, and his chambers are in a, I suspect are in a difficult situation because obviously they've got to make sure that whatever decision the Alban government makes is made in the right way and without any without any prospect of challenge.
Where do you stand on the present government's record, and what do you believe possibly the government, the current government, could have done differently?
That's a good question, and obviously, you know, I do work for the government, so I'm sensitive to that. The last 5 years have been very challenging. I mean, we live in a time of global geopolitical uncertainty. We've got the recovery from COVID. You've got the Ukraine situation, impact on inflation. I think the current administration, to be frank, have had their hands full with a lot of those issues. In my world, that I'm more comfortable with, the financial and professional services world, we've got a significant challenge ahead called MoneyVal. I mean, that inspection and evaluation in September and into October. I think that we've spent a lot of resource put into that, particularly over the last couple of years within government and within industry, which has been a diversion from many other things, and has meant that I think there's some things which you may have hoped would have been done have not been done. One thing I'm looking forward to is post MoneyVal. As I said earlier, the economy I think is the key issue going forward into the next administration, and we've got an opportunity in the post MoneyVal world to essentially reset government's relationship and the regulator's relationship with our sector, particularly the financial services sector, and really reinvigorate that going forward, and make sure the Isle of Man is an attractive place for international firms to do business and to place business here. We've also have an opportunity to look at other aspects of the economy as well. I think it can't be underestimated the amount of stress that MoneyVal preparation has caused.
Now, you are, of course, a chartered accountant by profession. Is there, do you believe, a shortage of that kind of analytical mind in the current administration?
Well, I think it's all about who stands and who puts their hand up to stand. I mean, as you say, I'm a chartered accountant. I believe that we need people within our parliament who have commercial and professional experience. I think we're looking at significant decisions. We need people who can analyse balance sheets, who've got experience of managing multi-million pound budgets and making decisions, delivering on budget and delivering on time. That's my perspective, why I'm standing. I think I don't want to criticise existing politicians because it's quite, they had the wherewithal to stand and to get elected. So they did well.
Now, I mean, growing the economy is one of your key priorities. How would you like to see that done? Is there something specific that comes to mind?
I mentioned a minute or so ago, particularly within the financial services world and professional services world, the post MoneyVal period gives us an opportunity for a reset and a new economic strategy to really drive growth in that sector. That's imperative. We are in a competitive world, and we see Jersey and Guernsey, who've recently been through similar but not the same MoneyVal experiences, have got very forward-thinking, outward-facing growth strategies. We need to be competitive and make sure that the Isle of Man fights its corner and attracts new business. That's within the financial services world, which I'm, I suppose, most experienced with. But last week I was at the Maritime Conference, and that's a fantastic sector. There's an overlap with financial services, but there's lots of the Isle of Man economy is very diverse, and I think there's lots of opportunity there. I was talking to delegates about innovation in that space and things that we could do on the Isle of Man that potentially they couldn't do anywhere else. I think there's lots of opportunity. We need, as a government, our next administration needs to have a focus on those opportunities for economic growth and for a cohesive plan across government departments and agencies to push forward in those directions and really build on the strengths that the Isle of Man has.
You also cite healthcare as a priority alongside education. How do you turn around a juggernaut like the health service? Is it simply more money, or would you maybe consider other more radical elements, such as maybe some privatisation of parts of the service?
How do you turn around a juggernaut? Well, that's a good question. I think there are some specific questions I get asked in the South, in Russian, about healthcare, about services we have locally, and the ability, using surplus assets that we have in the South, to pay, maybe relocate some clinics and services to avoid people travelling to Douglas or Ramsey from what is now quite a large population centre in the South. In terms of Manx care, I think it is a big beast, as you say. There's a question of funding. There's a question of service delivery. And there's also a question, in the middle of that, there's a question of efficiency. And, I do speak on the doorsteps to people who work for Manx Care, and I've had quite a few people say to me that they don't believe the issue is in the budget. It's more about how it's spent and the way that that technology and procedures and processes within the health service have evolved over time, and the way they're evolving in other jurisdictions. We need to make sure that we're on the cusp of that, and potentially have perhaps stronger relationships with healthcare trusts in the UK, so that we can take advantage of the latest techniques, the latest opportunities, and the latest efficiencies that we can bring into the system. I mean, we are, the Isle of Man government does have there is a finite budget. We can't print money. So, I mentioned, budget, efficient service delivery and services which are delivered. There's got to be a balance there. You mentioned privatisation. I'm not in favour of privatisation, but I think there are things that we can do around the edges of that. I mean, within the financial services world, there's lots of members of staff of companies benefit from private healthcare and private insurance, which they can't avail themselves of on the Isle of Man. So any way that we can support businesses who want to operate in that area, it might not take a huge amount of pressure off the health service, but there must be things that we can do around the edges of that, which mean that people can take advantage of products they're already paying for.
Now, if you're elected, Michael, you'd be one of 24 MHKs, and we've had MHKs sitting and prospective, both all talking about the fact that as of one of 24, there's a limit to maybe what is possible as a politician. What of the system of government itself? Is it really as democratic as we think, or does it need a shake-up? I mean, as one of 24, how do you really make a difference?
That's a good question. I mean, we don't have a party system, and I think that's we're better served by that, because I think the system we have is internationally renowned as being stable. I mean, when I talk about the Isle of Man in different parts of the world, stability, security, safety are big factors and that we talk about, and one of the elements of stability is political stability. We don't have lurches from left to right or whatever it may be that you might see in other jurisdictions, and I think that is to our advantage. There is only so much one person can do. I suppose that is true. But I do think that, let's put it this way. All the good things which have happened on the Isle of Man, in terms of from a business perspective, that I can remember, have happened when we've had effective collaboration. Collaboration between government, industry, regulators, whoever's needed at that time. And I think that one thing that I've seen that through my career as well, and one thing which I think I can do with my background, particularly my background within the financial services community, is bring people together and get the right people in the room. And I think in terms of moving forward, I talked about economic reset of an economic strategy. It's about getting the right people in the room and getting everyone to agree and commit across the piece to deliver on a project. So I think one of the key skills that you need as a politician here on the Isle of Man is that ability to get people together.
Now, you obviously have a long professional career. Have you always thought about entering politics, or is there, would you say, a specific trigger behind your decision to maybe do it now?
No, not a specific trigger. I have thought about it at time to time. I was very close to doing this 10 years ago. I decided it wasn't the right time for me then. It is the right time for me now for a number of reasons. It's always been something. It's been something which was on my mind for a while, and I'm pleased to be here, be doing this, being grilled by you, Simon. To be honest, this summer's been quite exciting so far, and I'm really looking forward to the rest of it.
Now, looking at one of the issues that you mentioned, obviously education, which is close to the heart of I think everybody on the island. Are you concerned about the progress so far in respect of a replacement for Castle Rushen High School?
Yes. When you asked me one of the points that comes up on the doorstep a lot, I didn't mention Castle Rushen High School, and it does. It's probably the third most referenced matter. Living I've always lived in Port Erin and Port St Mary. I mean, I think the replacement for Castle Rushen High School has been talked about for at least 20 years in one way, shape or form. And we just need, I don't want to make it sound too simplistic, but we just need to make a decision, get it done, employ appropriate project managers to make sure it's delivered on budget and on time, keep the trades local, wherever possible, so the money recirculates through the economy. We just need to get it done. I've spoken to teachers and parents of pupils and ex-pupils of Castle Rushen, and some of those are fascinating. I've spoken to parents who were told that it was going to be finished before their children even started, and I've spoken to pupils who've been told that there was going to be significant work done before they left, and that was a number of years ago. So yes, it's an imperative for the whole of the south of the island, and that's. I don't know if you've seen my literature, but that is something which I'd be committed to if I'm elected, is doing whatever I can to make sure we get that over the line and get it delivered.
And in terms of the local authorities, how do you view the relationship between government and local authorities on the island? Should they be working together more closely, or are you happy with the relationship as it stands?
That's a good question. In my professional career, one of my first jobs as a trainee accountant and my last job as a partner in our firm was the local authority public audit. So I'm very familiar with the local authority structure and the way that works. I think it's obviously the local authority structure is something which has served us well for over many decades, hundreds of years, in fact. And I think it's interesting to see. Certainly, I saw a lot of discussions over collaboration over certain functions and services in my previous life. And I think that's inevitable, particularly as communities grow together and what were 100 years ago quite separate. Villages and towns, as they've grown together, I think there is inevitably going to be change in terms of how local authorities are organised and structured, in terms of how they work with government. I think, to be frank, there's always been a degree to which that relationship seems a little bit tense, probably from both sides, and. Obviously, it shouldn't be that way. I mean, I mentioned before about the economic success of the Isle of Man is when people collaborate and work together. I do think that we should collaborate, share resources, work together wherever possible, because it's in the ratepayers' interest. It's in everyone's interest.
Now, we've mentioned already the fact that most of the people who go into the House of Keys are independents, but. In terms of yourself, where would you place yourself on the political spectrum? Left, right, centre?
If it was in the UK.
Mm.
If I was a UK politician, then I'd probably position myself slightly to the right of centre. So I'd be a little bit blue rather than a little bit red. I would suggest probably more like a One Nation type position there.
Yeah, and in terms of the Isle of Man, is that pretty much where you feel that our governments have steered in the past?
That's an interesting question. I think we've seen in the last administration there's been some tension there in at certain times over the direction of travel. I think the Isle of Man is a fairly conservative place, fairly socially and a conservative jurisdiction. So I think that fits quite well. I think it's not necessarily about the colour and about the what your political ethos might be. I think the key for me is making the right decisions. Making the right decisions for the long-term future of the island, not the short-term imperative. It's all about the long-term, and that's really why I'm standing. I want my son and the generation that follows him to have the same opportunities that I've had on the Isle of Man. I've had a fantastic career here, and I want to do my best to make sure that I can deliver that to generations that follow.
And you've obviously observed the political scene for many years. Is there a Manx politician, maybe past or present, that you have particularly admired?
That's a good question. And I think I think people on the Isle of Man, I think sometimes a little bit unfair to politicians. I think it takes a lot of guts to stand up and put your hand up and stand for election. And obviously, I know a lot of the politicians in the south, the long-standing politicians. I knew Noel Kringle, I know Miles Walker very well, and Jerome Watterson. Obviously, my mother was a politician, as you know, for a period of time. I think we've generally been well served by the people that we elect, and I hope that continues.
Now, Michael, environmental issues we've sort of touched on, but they have had a high profile in recent times. Where do you stand on government's net zero policies? Are you a supporter, or do you think maybe the commitments should be scrapped or at least relaxed?
That's a good question. I'm certainly not a climate change denier or anything like that. I think the Manx government, probably alongside many others throughout Europe and the wider world, signed up for various commitments in the Paris Agreement in good faith, obviously quite a few years ago now. I think it's interesting to see that as time passes and other factors change and geopolitics changes, obviously we can see other jurisdictions, including the UK, now rowing back on some of those commitments. I think it's inevitable that the Isle of Man will do the same. We don't want to be an outlier blazing a trail on this. And I think it would be a glib comment to say that, good economic opportunities sacrificed on the altar of net zero. I mean, that's something which I hear people say, and I can understand why they say that. I think we need to be balanced. We need to be responsible, respectful of the environment that we live in. But I think things do change, and I think the situation that we had when we signed up to the Paris Agreement has changed quite a bit. I think we should have a proper audit in terms of where we are and the commitments that we've made, how they'll be delivered, how much they'll cost, and also look at that in the context of other jurisdictions and our neighbouring jurisdictions, just to make sure we make sure we take advantage of opportunities that we have, and that we're not hamstrung by the decisions that were made in good faith in the past, but perhaps don't necessarily fit appropriately in the light of day to day. That'd be where I stand on that.
Now, another policy of the current government has been to raise the population. The target of 100,000 was mentioned, obviously, in the government's report. They've fallen short to date. But do you think we really need to push for such a rise? I mean, we have seen changes in the island's community, haven't we? The makeup of the community is changing.
Yes, and I think you could say it's always been that. It's always been thus, hasn't it? I mean, the population of the Isle of Man in my lifetime has moved from probably high 40,000 back in the late 1960s to 84,000 now. The majority of people on the Isle of Man weren't born here. I think immigration has been very good to the Isle of Man. In my, I spent 20 years as in charge of recruitment in the private sector in the business where I worked. And one of the biggest challenges we had, and actually the biggest constraint I think on growth on the Isle of Man, has been the ability for us to fill job vacancies. I think traditionally, or I think it's still true today now, there's hundreds of job vacancies that can't get filled. And that is a challenge and a break on economic growth. Obviously, all these, you know, when we talk about growth, there's got to be a balance. Obviously, there's infrastructure challenges and other pressures. But, you know, I've seen Port Erin, you know, where I live, treble in size and population in my lifetime. And, you know, that's, you know, there's been quite a lot of good coming out of that. It means we've got a vibrant high street, we've got, you know, vibrant, you know, promenade, we've got a, you know, a large supermarket and, a local butcher. It means we've got a viable proposition there. I think if you talk to people in the hospitality industry, you know, and those sectors, you know, it's great being busy on a Friday and Saturday night. You've got to be busy on a Tuesday and Wednesday night. And, you know, more young people, more footfall is something that they really crave. I think with all things, there needs to be balance. And then as we grow, I'm not sure necessarily whether 100,000 is the right number. But, you know, if we grow and when we grow, we do need, though, to make sure that we do it in an appropriate way, and that infrastructure investment, you know, is leads investment in housing or growth in other areas. And there have been projects and situations on the Isle of Man where, you know, houses have been built and the school hasn't been expanded. And, you know, when you look at those kind of situations, you think, well, actually, shouldn't that have been done the other way around? The planning condition should have been expand the school first and then build the houses. So I think we have to look at things in a rational way. I think the Isle of Man can cope with some growth, but I think we need to make sure that when we grow, it is for the proper economic imperative of, you know, getting people in, appropriately skilled people to fill job vacancies in our community, but make sure that we have infrastructure in place so that the, you know, bringing new residents to, you know, our fantastic island doesn't put pressure on the existing population.
Now, the government has spoken of building more affordable homes when in reality no local authority properties have been built at all by the present administration. Would you campaign to get more of those sort of properties built on the island?
Yeah, there's two points there, isn't there? social housing. I mentioned a couple of minutes ago, Port Erin's trebled in size in my lifetime, and the social housing provision has been nowhere near that. In terms of, there's been marginal growth. I do think we need a fundamental review of the adequacy of social housing provision. I'm spending time talking to people on the doorstep. I'm talking to people, you know, in single people who are living in three-bedroom properties who'd actually like the opportunity to move to a smaller unit, but there's no smaller units available. So there's things there which I think we need to look at the mix of social housing that we have available. You mentioned affordable housing. I mean, I'm probably showing my age now in terms of the affordability and, you know, what I borrowed from my first house that I bought. I think there's a huge problem with affordability, and I think the problem is more fundamental than that. It's the problem is getting on the first stage of the housing ladder. I know the schemes that we have to support first-time buyers, and I've spoken to some young people who've tried to take advantage of those schemes and not been able to because of the tight restrictions in certain aspects of that. I know that's been reviewed recently, but I think that needs to be reviewed again. I think we need a scheme to help people pay deposits. Now, whether that's an interest-free deferred repayment loan that the government or government can work with banks to deliver, but when I'm talking to people, I think the fundamental problem in terms of people wanting to buy and get on that housing ladder is often that finding the deposit to begin with, and if you can't raise that through family means, you know, I think sometimes people find it impossible. So I think we should look at all sorts of creative ways to help people get on the housing ladder, because I appreciate it's difficult.
And finally, just the last few seconds. If people are going to vote, why should they vote for Michael Crowe?
Well, I'm standing because I want to make a difference. You know, a representative's first job is to listen to constituents, but the second is to bring financial clarity and strategic vision to the table, planning for the next generation, not just the next political cycle. You know, there is no magic money tree, and the decisions that we make in this parliament must be the right decisions for the long-term future of the island. So, if elected, I will do my best for Rushen and for the whole of the Isle of Man. I'd be deeply honoured to have your vote on the 24th of September.
That was Michael Crowe, who's standing for election in Rushen. Also standing in the constituency are Gary Chambers, Michelle Hayward, Mark Kemp, Helen Shepherd, Lawrence Vaughan Williams and Simon Williams. You can listen back to this interview, along with all the others recorded as part of this series, shortly after broadcast from your usual podcast provider. And to find out more about the general election, we've got everything you need to know on our dedicated website. You can find that, as always, at manxradio.com.